rise. Court is in session. Master Commissioner Gregory Matthews.
Please be seated. The next case this morning is case number 2016-1074, Lafarge North America, Inc. versus Joseph W. Testa, Tax Commissioner of Ohio. For the appellant, Mr. Lloyd.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve at least 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, just watch your time.
I will do that. This is an appeal from an order of the Board of Tax Appeals upholding a sales and use tax assessment against Lafarge North America concerning its slag manufacturing operation in Lordstown, Ohio. Lafarge manufactures slag that's sold for commercial use in three sizes, 0 to 3/4 inch, 1 to 4 inches, and 4 by 8 inches. It's important that the board, Lafarge, and the tax commission all agree that processing raw slag, which is a byproduct of steel manufacturing, into saleable size processed pelletized slag is manufacturing. The slag manufacturing process consists of breaking, cutting, or crushing slag into sizable pieces. This is important because this is one of the characteristics of the final saleable product. So is screening out impurities, and so is sorting it by saleable size. The first part of this operation is performed by the bulldozer, which is dedicated 100% of the time to doing this operation on the slag mountain area. The second and third parts are performed by the screening plant, which, as noted, the department, the board, and Lafarge all consider to be definitely a manufacturing operation, definitely manufacturing. The department assessed Ohio sales tax on parts and fuel used by the bulldozer, again, 100% used in this operation. Two front-end trucks, which were 90% and 100% used in the operation, and three dump trucks, which were 95, 95, and 60% used in the operation. The five pieces of equipment, the front-end loaders and the dump trucks, transported the processed, crushed-up, saleable-size slag to the screening plant, where it was, again, the impurities were screened out, sorted by size, and oversized pieces, that is, pieces that were bigger than 4 by 8, would be broken down into saleable size pieces.
And I have a question of clarification, which is, it's not entirely clear for me from looking at the record. How much of the breaking down of the slag has already happened by the time it gets to the screening plant?
Most of it. In fact, the bulldozer is the primary piece of equipment that is breaking down and crushing that material into the slag sizes, the sizes that it would be sold.
So once it gets to the screening plant, mm-hmm. Is it at that point mostly a matter of sorting the different sizes that already exist at that point? What exactly is happening at the screening plant?
Three things are happening at the screening plant. The impurities are being screened out of it, because slag has, if you read all the cases, you know, the Stein case and the Harsco cases, there are impurities, you know, there's some metal in there, things that are not slag. So those need to be screened out. So that's happening to everything that goes through it. The second thing is it's being sorted out. So those three sizes, if you look at if you notice in the record, there are two things going on. One is there's a video in the record of the bulldozer going back and forth over the slag, you know, running over it, crushing it. And you'll notice that the piles that are the surge piles that are being created by this bulldozer and then moved by the other equipment to the screening plant, those are all in roughly the same size, you know, although all mixed up at that point before they get to the screening plant. So at the screening plant, there's the impurities that are taken out. It's sorted by size, and then oversized pieces, which is a minority of the of the process. And you can tell just by looking at the pictures and by Mr. Wirtz's testimony that where he testified that these were being broken down by the bulldozer into saleable sizes. So a very small minority, I think, are actually being done at the screening plant.
And I'm not sure how relevant this is, but if you have an oversized piece at the processing plant, what happens with it then? Is it just broken down in some other way there?
There are breakers, I think, in the screening plant. There was not a whole lot of focus on the screening plant at the hearing because mm-hmm. the focus was on the items at issue, which were the bulldozer and the two front loaders and the three mm-hmm. dump trucks.
Okay, thank you.
It did, just to add on to your question, there are some very large pieces of slag in the on Slag Mountain. And I think one of the things that the board focused on was that they couldn't be transported to the screening plant unless they were broken down. I think if you look at the statutes, though, 5739.02.42G and 5739.015, as well as 5739.011, it's pretty clear that when a bulldozer in this type of slag operation is breaking, cutting, and crushing slag, it's affecting a change in form on the slag, that is, a change in its size. And it is acting a size down to what that product is going to be sold at. It's going to be sold at a much smaller size than, you know, where it is at originally. So breaking something down into size, acting on that product like that, is committing that material to the process of manufacturing slag. Because you don't look at, you know, what the product and material was before it was being processed. It's not what you start with, it's what you end with. And even in the statute, it says, primarily in a manufacturing operation to produce tangible personal property for sale. And part of this, the reason why this stuff is commercially saleable is because it is sized and broken down to sizes that customers will purchase it at.
I want to shift gears just a little bit and ask you about the standard of review in this case. Obviously, what we're talking about is very factual. Is this court's standard of review deferential, or is it de novo?
I think it's de novo, Your Honor, and the reason why it is because this is just an application of the facts to the law. It's pretty clear that, for example, the board found that if you look at the board's findings, it clearly said that the bulldozer was cutting and crushing the slag, the larger pieces of slag, to break them apart into smaller pieces. So it's pretty clear that the board, the facts are not an issue. You know, what was going on is not an issue. What's an issue is how the board was applying those facts to the law.
So your position is there are really no disputed facts here. It's just an application of those undisputed facts to the law that applies.
That is definitely our position.
Okay.
Moving to the law, in any case dealing with slag manufacturing, you know, so for example, Stein or in the Harsco cases, breaking down slag is a part of the process. It might be at some point in some different point in that particular case's manufacturing process, but I think it's important to point out that breaking down slag into saleable size pieces is a part of the manufacturing process. It's been held that way numerous times. Also, I think it's important to look at Sims, because in the Sims case, the baling and shearing operations, the baling where you had compression and crushing, and in the shearing where you had cutting, those were both also acting on the product, on the scrap, to get it down to, again, dealing with size concerns. And those pieces versus the mixing, you know, versus the mixing were considered to be manufacturing operations. I think it's also interesting to note on the penalty side that in prior audits, the commissioner had not disputed that the slag mountain processes where the bulldozer was cutting, crushing, and breaking down the slag was a part of the manufacturing process. While that's obviously, you know, disputed by the commissioner, the fact is prior assessments were not made on this basis. So from the taxpayer standpoint, the tax commissioner had acquiesced to that treatment in prior audits. And I think that as it relates to the penalty piece, if you would like me to move on there, Your Honor.
Feel free if you'd like to.
I'm going to, unless you have any other additional questions.
Actually, I will stop you. I would like to get to the penalty question, but before you get there, can you explain your position on the... There's a question that comes up in the brief about the primary use, and I'm a little confused as to when that question becomes relevant in this case. So if you could just clarify.
Sure. On primary use, it's clear that the bulldozer is used 100% of the time in the slag mountain processes, and the front-end loaders are used 90% and 100% respectively, and the dump trucks 95%, 95%, and 60%. Now, it's clear that what the front-end loaders and the dump trucks are doing are moving that processed slag to the screening plant. And the bulldozer is breaking, cutting, and crushing the slag. So if the court determines that as a matter of law, that is manufacturing, that is the beginning of the manufacturing process occurs when the bulldozer breaks down slag into saleable size pieces, mostly, then that would mean that the primary use of the bulldozer is for manufacturing slag. Because if you go back to the definition of manufacturing, it's primarily in a manufacturing operation to produce tangible personal property for sale. And so in this case, our position is that the bulldozer in breaking, cutting, and crushing the slag into these pieces affects a change in form on those pieces. You can't uncrush the slag. You can't unbreak the slag. It is broken down into those pieces, which are acting on the, so it's acted on the product, and thus it has committed the material to the process of manufacturing slag.
In my, I guess my understanding is that what's really at issue is fuel and some repair costs here.
That's correct.
So this goes back to my question about whether there are disputed facts. I mean, fuel obviously is this fungible product. So is there any dispute that however much fuel has been allocated to these particular machines for this particular part of the operation, that's an accurate number, I guess?
That is an accurate number. There's testimony in the at the board that roughly 30% of the total fuel purchases were used in that operation. And so the auditor disallowed roughly 30% of those. And so all the undisputed purchases of fuel or all the undisputed purchases of fuel or repair parts were paid. Tax was paid on those.
Okay.
On the penalty side, I think that it's important that the Renacci case, R-E-N-A-C-C-I, mm-hmm. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, came out right about the same time that the Lafarge case did. And I think that it would have really informed the board's decision as to whether or not the commissioner abused his discretion in failing to abate the penalty. Since the items at issue, since this process is at issue, had previously been treated as part of the manufacturing process, that should have played into the commissioner's determination in the board's. And we'd ask that it be remanded, or we'd ask that A, be vacated, or B, remanded to the board for consideration in light of Renacci.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Kim.
Good morning, Master Commissioner. May it please the court, this court should affirm the BK's ruling for three reasons. First off, we're dealing with materials handling and transport of raw materials, and that, as we have stated in our briefs and we have long held, consistently, that is before that slag and raw material was committed to the manufacturing process, not part of, as Mr. Lloyd suggests. A separate but related inquiry is where you are going, Your Honor, which is that the primary use of these vehicles, and therefore the costs associated with those repairs and such, that was to transport the slag, the raw slag to the plant. Specifically, it was to transport from the raw slag's initial storage to another point in pre-production storage. Let me segue real fast to your question about our discussion with Mr. Lloyd about are there disputed facts. Well, I can get into them as we go, but we would submit that there is a dispute about certain facts, and most notably that Mr. Lloyd is describing the breaking down of the raw slag off the mount into saleable size pieces. That is clearly not in the record. The record suggests that what is being done at the mountain, and we're talking about just a huge mountain that sits next to the facility, that when the raw slag is being broken off of that mountain, it's being crushed or scraped off or whatever, but it's being done so in a way to make it so it fits on the trucks. And that's the only reason that was stated in that was cleaned out of the record. Any notion of rendering it down into sizes, the specific sizes for purposes of the different size products that Mr. Lloyd was talking about, that's all taken care of by the filter and by the screening that's done at the plant itself.
And I guess a more preliminary question is, what is your view on the standard of review in this case? Mr. Lloyd said that he believes it's de novo. What's your position?
Well, certainly as to the facts, certainly if there's evidence in the record to support the BTA's factual findings, this court should affirm those facts. As to the law, I recognize that there has been some recent case law that has talked about presumptions of validity and whatnot. We would still submit that there is some presumption of validity to the tax commissioner and the BTA's findings, but we recognize that there is that might be a closer call on that sort of thing. But so, as to the facts, certainly it is certainly a case of this court should affirm if there is record evidence to support those facts.
So Mr. Lloyd's suggestion that the facts are undisputed and it's just an application of the law to the facts, you're disagreeing with that?
I would disagree with that. I mean, notably, first off, as I just discussed, this notion of breaking down into saleable size pieces, there that suggests or implies that when the pieces are being broken off the mountain of raw slag, that there is being any consideration being made to, oh, well, we need to get this down to this size or we need to make sure that we get down a number of pieces of this size and a number of pieces of this size. All they're doing is breaking off pieces to get it to be, oh, well, we need to get it to be small enough to fit so we can move it.
But isn't the whole process that we're talking about a question of breaking a very large slag mountain into smaller pieces? So why doesn't it start the moment you first break it off the mountain?
Well, because you have to look at not only that act, but also to the extent that there is a change of state or form, whatever, you have to look at that in conjunction with the notion of committed to the manufacturing process. At that point, it's still raw slag. There's nothing being done to it. There's no blending, there's no mixing, there's no chemical treating.
But my question would be, is there ever in this process? My understanding is that the tax commissioner concedes that slag, this process is manufacturing, it's just a matter of when it begins. So you've pointed to other things that are not happening at the Slag Mountain, but do these things ever happen in the process?
Well, so I think that segues, Your Honor, that segues us into a distinction between some of the cases that Lafarge and Mr. Lloyd rely upon, cases like Harsco, cases like Stein, which talk about the transport and breaking of raw slag, and that having been deemed by this court as part of manufacturing. In those cases, what you dealt with was you had a continuous loop of raw slag that was being produced as a byproduct of that taxpayer's own production process. And so the fact that it was then being the byproduct was coming out of its own process and then being recycled and reclaimed back into its process. Here, it's a fundamentally different situation because you have a mountain of slag that's upwards of 100 years old, and slag that constitutes the byproduct of the production processes of any number of steel companies from the turn of last century. We state this in our brief, basically what Lafarge is trying to do is bootstrap the production process that created that byproduct as part of its own production process. That's not what it's doing. And so here you've got, you have to treat it with some distinction because you are dealing with the raw slag is not something that it created by itself or created by virtue of what it's doing in its production. What you're doing here is this is a raw material in every sense of the word. And when they break it off and crush it and break it down into smaller pieces, it's still raw slag in every sense of the word. To the extent that they need to break it down into certain specific sizes or to get it to a point where it fits within their production process, Your Honor captured it in your question. That's taken care of. And Mr. Lloyd also confirmed this. That's taken care of with the screening plan.
I have a question regarding the term raw slag, and that was a little confusing to me because it was never really clear what change happens besides just the breaking apart in size. So that I'm a little confused by the term raw, because what else is being done to it besides just breaking it into progressively smaller pieces?
Maybe I can elucidate that a little bit. Let me say first that in this particular case, there was no evidence or discussion in the record of anything else other than simply breaking off pieces of the slag. In some other cases, there has been discussion. I think it's the Harsco case. There is discussion in the court of where there's been some placement of slag, say in a pot or in some kind of other container where there's some kind of separation process that's been able to.
But isn't that much earlier in the process at the steel mill itself when it's all in molten state? I mean, back to your earlier argument was that I believe that these other cases involved sort of upstream activity. The slag processing in that case was just a continuation of the steel mill process. But couldn't you look at it to say that if it applied to an earlier point in the process, why not apply it? Why isn't it manufacturing now when it would conceivably have been manufacturing even when the slag was in its molten state?
I'm not sure I get.
I may have inartfully asked that question. I guess my concern is that, or my question is that, when the slag is initially produced as a byproduct of the steel making process, it is separated from the metal, correct?
My understanding is that's part of why we keep on referring to, that's one of the reasons why we keep on referring to this as raw slag, because the separation process, and Mr. Lloyd also alluded to this, that's also taken care of at the screening and the filtering. Literally the only thing that happens at any point before the raw materials get placed into the plant, the processing plant, is the breaking off and separating from the mountain. And so, you know, the Sims case also talked about the fact that it would pervert the notion of a continuous manufacturing operation if you would have a situation where the movement of raw materials, handling of raw materials and whatnot, could be done at any point in time prior to its insertion into the operations. And there's evidence in the record here that suggests that, yes, while there are some times when the product is moved immediately into the processing plant, but there's also piles that are sitting there that they could sit there for however long. And the point of the matter is that it could be minutes, it could be a month, it could be years. They can move all that stuff immediately or you know, well before, and that totally perverts the notion of what is a continuous manufacturing operation. And the case in Sims talks about that, and we discussed that in our briefs as well. If I could, Your Honor, the one other analogy that we like to think of, and I think it's really it can be helpful, is to think of a forestry company or a lumber company going out and chopping wood in a forest and then transporting it. Certainly this court, and I believe there's a case, Dinoon, from the late 80s or whatever, that suggests that, that confirms this fact, but going out to the forest to cut trees and put it on your trucks, you're only doing that to cutting it down so that you can get it on the truck. I mean, there's no treatment of the trees. There's no processing other than, well, yes, there's a change of state or form because it's no longer in the ground. But the primary purpose, and this gets back to the inquiry of primary use, which is tied in the statute to primarily being used for in a continuous manufacturing operation. The primary use here is not to get the product ready for sale or to get the product ready for processing. The primary use is to move it from one pre-production spot or its initial pre-production spot to another pre-production spot. And then everything beyond that, we've already disposed of because as that's in one of the facts that is not in dispute is that everything beyond that spot has been deemed part of the exempt continuous manufacturing process.
But what if, back to my original question to Mr. Lloyd, what if everything that shows up that's transported from the mountain to the screening plant, when it shows up at the screening plant, if it's in fact true that most of the breaking down has already occurred at that point, and it's fundamentally a question of sorting and taking out the things that don't belong there, does that change what you've just said about when the manufacturing is supposed to start, supposedly starts?
It could move the needle a little bit, but the simple issue is that there was literally no care taken or concern for, again, when the bulldozer is moving over the raw slag, there is no thought to, we need to get this down small enough to be prepared for the 4x8 or the 1x4.
Whether there's thought really matter? I mean, it's just, when is there ever thought? It's just put in the screening plant machine and it figures out what size is which. You're talking about whether there was any intent to produce a particular size at that time, but does intent of producing its size ever come into the process, really? It just sort of sorted, and it is sorted as it was, whatever it was.
Fair enough question, and without getting to the notion of whether intent is in the statute, because it's not, but the concerns that your Honor is raising is simply that all the concerns about size and about the purity of the product or purity of the raw slag or whatever, that's all taken care of in what's already been deemed exempt. So we're only talking about the movement. And so we get back to simply, at that point, it's still raw slag in the same raw slag that it was in the mountain to right before the screener.
But a good portion of the work has been done by the time it ends up at the slag plant, or at the
the Sims case is consistent with this, that alone is not enough, because you have to, it's when it is being committed to the manufacturing process, and that is as we've stated and as we've consistently held, it is at the screening. That's when it begins. So I see my time's up, Your Honor. I just, if I may make one point with regard to the penalty, since we
yeah, that's fine.
I think it's important to note, Your Honor, that the penalty at here the penalty at issue is not limited to just somehow the penalty associated with this portion of the tax. The penalty at here is dealing with the entirety of the tax. And so the notion that, so effectively what Lafarge is asking is that, you know, we would certainly maintain, as we've maintained all throughout, that there has been no inconsistency in the tax commissioner's position with regard to that limited issue of when the manufacturing process begins, and certainly they have provided no evidence other than their own self-serving testimony to suggest otherwise. But that does not change the fact that the penalty is for the entire assessment. Probably about 75% of which, if not more, has already been paid by Lafarge and not contested here. In fact, if you were to look at the penalty worksheet, which the commissioner used and presented to the taxpayer.
Okay, I think I understand your position. And since you've used your time, I think that's enough. Thank you.
Sir. Thank you.
Mr. Lloyd.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would just point that the pictures in the transcript provide a good...
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just want to let you know, you have a minute remaining, but since I let Mr. Kim go on a little bit, I'll give you 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. The pictures in the exhibits provided to the... and the narrative provided to the court show clearly that the... slag is being broken down much smaller than it would need to be in order to be transported, and that the it's clear to anybody looking at these pictures that it's down to the sizes that are saleable. As it relates to testimony, Mr. Wirtz was asked on cross, the bulldozer and the do you think the bulldozer changes or reduces the sizes of the slag material? Yes. Is that further processable at the screening plant? Correct. Is it necessary in order to get the slag material to saleable size? Right. And that's on page 25 of the transcript supplement. Page 43, Mr. Wirtz also describes the screening plant operation in the supplement at 041 on pages 19 and 20 of the testimony of the exhibit. I don't need to read it. I'll read it really quickly. At the screening plant, it's dumped into a grizzly feeder, vibratory feeder that tries to separate anything that's still too oversized to fit through the mill that will kind of fall off of the front of the feeder, and the rest of the material is funneled in a conveyor belt in the first of two screens that begin to separate by size. It clearly indicates it's mostly in saleable size when it gets to the screening plant. And the only machine that's doing that is the bulldozer. The last thing is, I think it's clear from Mr. Wirtz's testimony and the pictures that this is all part of a continuous process. There's only one bulldozer, and there are two front end loaders and three dump trucks that are moving what the bulldozer's producing directly to the screening plant. There's no evidence that it's sitting around for years after it's been processed. That's just pure speculation on the part of the commissioner. And as it relates to the penalties, it's clear from reading the BTA's opinion that the BTA, I hate to use this phrase, but they kind of rubber stamped the commissioner's penalty determination.
I do have a question about the penalty. It seems like the statute in the Renacci case was different from the one at issue here, correct?
It was.
And the one at issue here doesn't require the court to ask the same questions that were asked in that other case.
I think that because the in the Renici, because the statute here says may and provides the commissioner with discretion, the court and the board must be given enough information by the commissioner, and particularly the taxpayer must be given enough information about why the penalties was assessed in order to be able to coherently contest it. In this case, there's really no way to say, oh, commissioner, what do you mean? You know, what do you mean it was too much? What do you mean it was, what's a 5% penalty versus a 10% penalty versus a 15% penalty?
But in this case, I believe the tax commission, there was documents in the record that indicated the rationale, his rationale for imposing the penalty,
it was
correct?
It was mathematical, and it ignored the taxpayers' arguments as to why there was a reasonable basis.
But it seems like you're just arguing for different methods of determining whether my understanding is the tax commissioner's view is that looking at the entire amount that he believed owed during that period arriving at a percentage and determining that was unreasonably low, and you're arguing something else, that a different method should be used to determine whether compliance was there or not.
What I'm arguing is that the tax commissioner failed to take into consideration Lafarge's prior compliance, which was documented in the record.
Does anything in the statute require the tax commissioner or the BTA to take that into account?
It leaves it in the discretion of the commissioner, but the commissioner has not. It also gives the commissioner the ability to provide what rules or standards that the commissioner is going to use. And traditionally, due process requires one to be able to understand, why a penalty is being asserted. In this case, it's kind of just because. And the commissioner should be required to take into consideration not only aggregating factors, but also mitigating factors. And our position is that the tax commissioner failed to take into consideration the mitigating factors.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
This case will be submitted, and you will be advised of the court's decision.
Thank you, Your Honor. All rise.